Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. You have to invite me in. Let me in, Billy Crash.
I'll only let the right one in, Johnny.
Damn. Anyway, I am Johnny.
Glad we rehearsed.
Oh yeah, I know. I mean, we should take that on the road. That's what
yeah,
I said.
Oh yeah, totally, man. That was just like amazing.
In any case, and joining me tonight, as always, is
Billy Crash.
Absolutely, and I just stepped inside. I don't care whether you invited me or not. So
here you go.
We can't do a show if I'm like talking through the door at you. So.
Yeah, I would suck.
Though sometimes Skype is like talking through a thick wooden door. So
yeah,
anyway,
sometimes. But it's cold outside today, man. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That wind ruined my hair today.
No, I can tell. Yeah.
Thanks.
But in any case, we are continuing to celebrate Women in Horror Month.
Camp Street.
And we're also continuing our ongoing series of five-star horror films.
Mm-hmm.
This is a show where we will each pick five movies that we think very highly of and explain why. And today's theme is Lady Vampires.
I like Lady Vampires.
If you want to generalize it further, just female vampires.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what's proper here, but anyway. But something that I found interesting, and I mentioned this to Billy off mic before we hit the magic record button. We were looking online at some of the lists that are out there of female vampires in movies and elsewhere. And a lot of these lists have the qualifier of sexy female vampires.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, Bill, what do you think of that? I have we might have similar feelings about that, that specific categorization. And I think we'll get into it in some ways just by talking about the movies we're going to mm-hmm. talk about. But
yeah,
what do you think of that?
Well, I thought it was interesting because there is that the double standard exists, you know, when Dracula or another male vampire, you know, bites another guy, you know, oh, it's food, you know, and all that stuff. And maybe critics will say there's homoeroticism involved. But when it comes to a movie and a woman bites another woman, it's automatically a love interest, lesbianism, you know, is referred to. And it doesn't mean that vampires aren't sexy, even the male ones. I mean, look at what Frank Langella did to Dracula in 1979,
mm-hmm.
you know, but there's always that, you know, well, the first, you know, vampire book, what, Carmilla? You know, from,
yes.
You know, the 1800s. I mean, that's a damn good book. It really mm-hmm. is, you know, and the whole, I mean, it's all, you know, it's there. You could easily say it's lesbian erotica, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm fine with that. But, I just think it's interesting that when it comes to, you know, the male female aspect today, I think people really do look, at least men, I would say probably look differently on, male vampires versus female in regard to that whole sex element. But I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, and I think something I notice in at least some of the movies that I'll be talking about is there is sort of an emphasis on the male gaze.
Yeah.
You know, you are seeing oftentimes in these films, you're seeing women in some, you know, state of undress as part of the, you know, seduction,
mm-hmm.
You know, of a male, but not always. Another angle that a lot of these films play up is the more, I mean, I guess back in the 1970s when there was sort of a wave of female vampire films that were emphasize the, eroticism and also the lesbian angle
Sure.
of, it's like, well, the women don't want the men. They want each other,
Absolutely.
and in some cases, like the men are like the pitiful dog you just want to shake off your ankle, kind of, because they're just taking up, they're just taking up space, and they're becoming clingy. They're becoming like a Wayne from The Love Witch.
Man, if I were a woman, I'd want a woman too, man. I'd be like, guys are just pains. I admit it.
Well, and I think I guess I'd get bothered more with, the naming conventions of lists like that. Obviously, websites want their clicks. So, sexy's going to bring in, a certain contingent of people who are like, ooh, nudie photos or semi-undressed photos or whatever.
I help, man. When I was young, man, it was all about Vampirella, man.
Oh,
It's
jeez.
like, I couldn't help
Yeah.
myself, and I was a kid. What do you know? What do you want? And I remember I had that original from Harris Publications, that original 6-foot-tall poster of her, and I had no more room to hang posters in my bedroom, so I used fun tack and put her on a ceiling. So I'd go to bed and I'd look up and there she'd be, and I remember one night in the summer, it got really hot and the fun tack melted, and I hear a noise and I look up and there she is coming down at me. It's like, ah! It was, sorry, I don't know. I just had to like squeeze that in there somewhere. So there it is.
That's a, that's very, probably very stimulating and terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, I was attacked by Vampirella. It was like that's a good attack. I'm fine with that.
Well, there's a bit of that dichotomy there too, just based on that story, Bill. It's like, well, men are lured in or women are lured in by the promise of or the appeal of, physical pleasure, or the weakness men get when they see, exposed female flesh or whatever. And but there's also that element of foreboding as well. It's sort of like there's a push-pull going on, in some of these movies.
Yeah, and it's also interesting too when you brought that whole element up of sexuality and such. In I had the pleasure of writing for Thomas F. Flowers, Thomas S. Flowers. Oh my gosh, Machine Me Now blog about Dracula's daughter, and it's interesting because her, realizing, reading my review again, which I'd love to rewrite, no, it's like she's subjugated. She's a victim to her male underling. I mean, the guy who wants to, be made immortal, Sandor. And like anytime she tries to be happy or whatever, he's like putting her in her place. And she's still living under male domination because her, Dracula made her this way. And she didn't want to be. She wants to feel the sun again. She wants to not be a bloodthirsty demon, and it's like a man made me do this, and I think it says so much about subjugation and the exploitation of women,
Patriarchy,
all of it. Oh yeah, misogyny. I mean, I think people should definitely check Dracula's Daughter out, not just write it off. I think it's a really interesting film, not perfect, but has some very intriguing elements, especially for the 1936.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I mean, I'm wondering if that's one of the first films to kind of address the, I guess the female perspective in that sort of venue. But I guess you had a vampire, which that was a female vampire, if I'm recalling correctly as well.
Yeah, that was 1932, and that was the French-German production, and that's my favorite silent horror. It's creepy. I mean, not all of it is there. I mean, there's missing footage, but man, they did some really cool, creepy stuff in that one, man.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I believe the vampire in that film was an older woman. So it runs like contrary to where the female vampire kind of went, or how the female vampire was more popularized, I guess, within like the early Hammer cycle, and then beyond into the 70s, where it became a lot more about the erotic elements, or fusing the erotic with the horror kind of thing.
Yeah, with the males we had Charming, and with the females we had, you know, Sex Kitten. I mean, you know, it had like a playmate, you know, and except for, you know, Dracula's daughter, you know, she was like an elegant, regal, you know, royal figure of sorts, and that was very cool. But still, even with some of the choices I'm going to get to, and I'm sure you are, you know, there's an array.
Yeah, yeah, there definitely is. And well, why don't you get us started, Bill, with like number five, and we'll work our way up to our favorite female vampire film.
Okay, that I will do. Hey, one of mine went away. No, there it is. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, top five. Top five. This one goes back to 1995. It is filmed in black and white. You know where this is going already.
I do.
Mr. Ferrara, Abel Ferrara. His wonderful film, it's more about the philosophy of vampirism, The Addiction. And it stars the phenomenal Lily Taylor, who I think a fiend on film would do backflips for. Christopher Walken in a unique role for him. Always the lovely Annabella Sciorra, Edie Falco, and her compatriot from The Sopranos, Michael Imperioli. He plays a missionary in there. And it's about a graduate student at NYU who meets up with, you know, in a dark Greenwich Village street with the wrong persona. You know, and she becomes a vampire, and it's about the changes that overcome her. The only thing I don't like about the film is, and it's great because this is about intelligent women, you know, Lily Taylor and her relationship with Edie Falco as students, and, you know, talking about the elements of individualism and, you know, taking what you want and everything else and finding out who you are. And the only thing I didn't like is from the film is the people that she bites and feeds off of. None of them ever die. They only turn. And that becomes it becomes like a virus. You know, that I really, other than that, I thought it was very, it was really cool, intriguing. It's a short film. It's an hour and 22 minutes, but it feels like maybe it could have gone 10 minutes longer, a little bit more meat in there. It's not perfect. I gave it 3.5 stars. I thought it's like Nadja in a way. That film, that's black and white as well, but there's a whole element of the egomania associated with, I'm a vampire. You're all lesser beings. I'm the top of the food chain, you know, type of attitude. But, it's a cool take on the whole vampire mythos, where you get to see somebody trying to possibly, or who could, someone who could lead a normal life, but now they want to embrace that, the carnal elements, you know, and that's why her conversations with Christopher Walken are so awesome.
So I was going to say, Bill, because I have not seen The Addiction yet.
Oh!
It's a matter of it's not even available on DVD or Blu-ray, is it?
I got a copy that was in English for the Chinese market, so mine had Chinese subtitles on it.
Because Dave Kay sent that to you, didn't he?
Believe he did.
Okay.
I have the VHS somewhere in a box. Okay. But yeah, you could get it, man. It's definitely one that needs to be seen.
Yeah, I know, and you guys have talked so highly about it. Is there a bit of I'll just come right out and say it. Is there an element of pretension to the film, Bill, based on I feel like Nadja, I mean, I haven't watched it in probably 15 years, but I felt like there was kind of like, oh, it's the black and white. Oh, it's Van Helsing on a bicycle. Oh, there's a certain hipsterism before hipster became a actual term in the lexicon thing. Is that, you know, is there an element of that with The Addiction, or is it more just kind of an existentially straight film kind of. It sounds more like that, where it's
Yeah,
like
I
the
didn't feel
conversations and everything.
right. I didn't feel it was pretentious in any way, because Abe Belferrara, he's not a pretentious guy. He's just, you know,
Oh no, he's not.
I know somebody who worked with him, and he's like, that guy's fucking nuts. You know, it's like, you know, and but you know, in a good sense, you know, he's a creative force, and I don't think he would want to do any crap like that. And I didn't feel that at all.
Okay,
So.
cool. I looked it up today on the IMDb, and I was like, ah, it's an intriguing poster. And Lily Taylor, back before she became the Lily Taylor that we know today. So
Safe to say, yeah.
yeah, so I do have to see that one.
Yeah, she crushes it, man. She really does.
Yeah, Ferrara really has a unique voice, and like you said, he's pretty notorious for kind of bucking the system and just working outside of it and working in New York City with those locations and that type of cast too.
And
So,
that's why I love him.
yeah.
Driller Killer and Bad Lieutenant.
Ah,
Beautiful.
Bad Lieutenant. Oh my
Miss
God, that.
45.
Ah, oh, jeez. Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead, bud.
Well, my number five film, Bill, to totally go in another direction here, is a 2009 Suck.
It! Fuck, that was not on my list. You know, because I'm thinking, I'm just trying to like keep it really femme centric, but that one
Yeah.
actually is. So,
Well, it's
oh,
actually one
Suck
of the
is
first.
awesome.
Yeah, and I have you to thank for turning me on to that movie. And it's a very funny movie, but it's also very creative in its look and feel, I think, as well.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the writer director is Rob Stefanik, and the female vampire in the film is Jennifer, played by the lovely Jessica Paré.
Oh man, she is hyper delicious, man.
She is, and she's the bass player in this unsuccessful band called The Winners. And they're on a tour, and they run afoul of some nocturnal activity that turns Jennifer into a vampire, who gradually starts turning the band members into vampires as well. But with the band members turning into vampires, they find their popularity shooting through the roof as a result.
Hell yeah.
So But I just, it's been a while since I've watched this, but I totally fell in love with the character of Jennifer. I
God,
believe
she's
she
fantastic.
and I believe she's the only female member of the band as well.
Yes.
So there is that, in some cases these days we say it's like, oh, they have a female, they have a girl guitar player or something like that, like a sort of almost dismissive kind of tokenism or whatever. But that's not the case here, and
No.
she's sort of the reason that the band starts to pick up in popularity, because people are literally spellbound by her. They're hypnotized and entranced by her bass playing prowess and singing and everything. So
Yeah, and what a cast in this film, man.
oh yeah, talk a little bit about it, Bill, because I know you love this movie too.
Oh man, I really love it. I watch it like it's, when usually when I watch it, it's like I give it another whirl and watch it back to back. Alice Cooper, Moby is in it. He plays Beef. Henry Rollins is Rockin' Roger, Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
Alex Lifeson, you know, from Rush. The cool thing is, you know, Nicole DeBoer, if you're a Cube fan,
Oh yeah.
and Malcolm McDowell's great in it. He plays Eddie Van Helsing, but it's great because you watch like, you know, outtakes and stuff, and it's like everybody's singing in a movie but me, and so he breaks in the song, and it's like so cool, man. And this movie's just a blast. They use some really cool model sets. They
Yes.
have just great match cuts with weird, you know, it's just a blast. And mimicking album covers, classic album covers and shit. And
Yeah.
it's just so much fun. And oh man, yeah, I love it. And yeah, Jen Jessica Perez, she kills it, she destroys it, and because the rest of the band, you know, they're, you know, geeks and
They're kind of like the not schlubby, but they're kind of like the dorky guys, kind of, you know.
Yeah, it was funny. It was like, it was like Weezer could beat them up, you know?
Yeah.
And I love Weezer, so there we go.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And it's also a different, you know, we were talking earlier about the sex appeal and, you know, how that's kind of used in some of these movies as like a
Yeah.
selling point or, you know, as its own form of hypnosis to draw in, you know, curious viewers. But I think they kind of, from what I remember, they kind of steer away from that and suck. You know, it's
Yeah, they
not.
do.
Yeah,
They
so.
do. They did a really wonderful job with that, and I like that because you know Jessica Perret, you know, her character is also very grounded in a sense, and there's a natural progression that she goes through in you know becoming what she is, and you know ha what happens to the rest of the band, and it's all about a group and a team. And what happens versus, you know, some crazed seductress, you know, type of element. Because she's never nude in the film or anything like that. It's not, you know, it doesn't go into that territory. It's about rock music and, you know, it's about music and music and vampires. It's like, shit, man, that's gold.
Yeah, Bill, and you know, you brought up a really good point, like about the I guess the inclusiveness of the group and everything like that. You actually like these characters. It's like you're not you don't it's a fun movie because you know the filmmakers did it smart. You know, they actually develop the characters, you like the characters, and you can appreciate their situation. And yeah, I just thought that was admirable, you know.
I agree that that's part of the reason why it's on my best of list of all time, and that's only like 83 films, and that one's on it. So,
Oh, wow.
yeah, it's oh yeah, I give it 4.5 out of 5, man. I love it.
God damn, that's impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody has to do
I know, babe, Bill. Yeah.
it.
We need to hook up with the filmmakers behind Suck and tell them how much we love it.
Oh man, well if we're going from suck, we're going to vamp.
All right, Bill, tell us about Vamp.
Oh, I love it. 1986. The Richard Wenk film starring the depending on how you look at her, the infamous I love her, Grace Jones. She is a vampire queen in true sense of the word who owns a nightclub in a, you know, dark part of town, and what she does is, you know, if somebody's a loner and they're there, they get them drunk, they get them wasted, and one of her keepers will be like, "Hey, who's this bum belong to?" You know, just to make sure nobody lays claim. Guess who's dinner? You know, it's fantastic because it's a coming of age story mixed in with a romance. You know, Chris Makepeace is in it. Sandy Baron, who's fantastic. Dee Dee Pfeiffer, who's phenomenal in
Oh,
this. Oh,
yeah.
just love her. You know, Robert R Russler. But, you know, besides Grace Jones, you have Billy Drago. You know, you can't, like.
Oh, he's awesome, yeah.
Oh, man, he just kills. And this film is a complete blast playing off of the more tried and true Dracula mythos, where she has handlers, and you know there's one special who you know who especially who loves her, has been with her forever, waiting for that blessing of immortality, and you know she's surrounded by all the dancers in the club. They're all vampires. So anytime you see like vampire strippers or any crap like that, this was first,
Yeah.
and it's a blast. The only thing that I want is I would love to see a great Blu-ray to come out of this from I don't know, Scream Factory or something, where I don't know if Richard Wank have ever planned on doing like a director's cut or anything like that, or if anybody cares like I do. But it's one of those movies where you watch the trailer and you're like, a lot of those scenes aren't in the movie, and I mean a lot. You know, it's like,
Oh,
yeah, and it's a really good movie, and it's like, but some of those other scenes look awesome too, so let's put the whole damn thing together. It's a fun 80s movie. It's a blast. And Grace Jones is just hardcore, man.
You know, Bill, I agree with you because you loaned me this one a while back too. And it's in some ways it would make a interesting companion to something like Suck, actually, because it does have that humor element to
Definitely.
accompany the horror. Just different eras, obviously, but and definitely with the fact that Grace Jones is, the lead vamp, and she cuts, she's charismatic, but she also cuts that fearful figure as well when you first see her with the fangs and the color contacts and everything.
Oh man. I mean, she was the one when she was on in Conan 2, you know, she was being trained by a guy in stick fighting, and you know, she doesn't know when to let up, you know, she slammed the guy in the head, he had to rush to the hospital. And one day, I think it was when she was doing the one James Bond film with Roger Moore, she showed up on set and she was wearing a dildo, a strap-on dildo. She's laughing, no one else is laughing. And I'm like, Grace, call me. You know, it's like, but nothing happened. So here I am.
Well, Bill, don't quote me on this, but I believe Arrow put out a special edition of
Really?
Vamp, but it might be a UK release. It might need a so I'd have to check, but I feel like they
I'm
did put out
moving.
a. Yeah, all right. Or just get an all region player or something.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure like a better version than the old Anchor Bay disc is out there somewhere. So and perhaps those deleted scenes from the trailer too. Well, Bill, one I saw just recently, but it left a real big impression on me. Was Jean Rollin's 1975 film Lips of Blood.
Oh man, I gotta see that.
Thanks to Shudder, I got to see two of Mr. Rollin's films, and the other one was The Iron Rose, which Dixie Ferry wrote a review of for Loud Green Bird a few years back, and I actually really liked that one too. So
That's cool.
thanks, Kim, for piquing my curiosity there. The thing I noticed about those two movies, though, and Raleen's kind of aesthetic, is he doesn't tend to operate in. His films don't feel heavily scripted or plotted, for that matter. They definitely thrive on atmosphere and location. And Lips of Blood is definitely no exception. It's a beautiful film about a man who sees a photograph of a. I'm pulling this from the IMDb synopsis. He sees a photograph of a ruined seaside castle, which triggers a strange childhood memory. He then goes on a strange quest, aided by four female vampires, to find the castle and the beautiful woman who lives there. And two of the vampires that he is consistently seeing on sort of his dreamlike, being pulled along journey, they're just referred to as Jumel vampire, and I'm not sure what Jumel means. If that means female, or I don't even want to guess because I don't speak French. But it's essentially a twins, and
Oh.
they're played by actual twins, Catherine Castell and Marie-Pierre Castell. And I'll share a GIF with you on Twitter, Bill, after we're done recording the show of the two of them. They strike a seriously unforgettable an unforgettable impression once you see them. And it's just I really like the film, and I really like that sort of dreamlike atmosphere to it. He does a really good job of making you just like you're either going to accept that from the get-go and just go along for the ride, or you're just going to have to stop watching, kind of, because, depending on what your sensibility is. But a big part of that film are those, those female vampires who just periodically pop up, sort of like, okay, you're in the right place, or you're in the wrong place, or this is just a dream sort of thing. They don't have any dialogue. They just appear. They show their fangs. They pose a threat, but not always. And it's just fascinating to watch because, in some ways, Rolin kind of, you could probably take a lot of the dialogue out of his films and still, you could turn them into silent movies, and they would still probably have a similar effect, just because they're so heavy on that atmosphere and so heavy on that mood.
Oh, I got to
And
see this.
yeah, and the men are kind of presented, the Iron Rose isn't a vampire film, but it's kind of, the men are presented as perplexed or confused or uncomprehending towards the female presences in the film, and that's because the female presences are something that's beyond human, something beyond the man, which is just a man in the strict human sense. So I think that's an interesting kind of conversation that he brings up without like hammering hard on it, basically.
Definitely, and just so you know, Johnny, Jamel is twin.
Ah, there we go. Okay.
There's this new thing
There.
called Google Translate. It's it works.
Well, okay. I'm okay. All right. Female twin. Yeah, that was close. But yeah, Lips of Blood, you can, as far as I know, you can watch it on Shudder, and it's available, I think, on DVD from Redemption, and it's pretty easy to find if you want to check it out. So,
Excellent, that I do, man.
yeah.
Especially after you sold it like that, forget it. I'm there, man. Oh, so it's my turn. I'm gonna jump up to a movie that came out in 1983. That it's an excellent love triangle film. You've seen it. I know you enjoyed it.
Oh,
And
I
I,
love it. Yeah.
yeah, it's Tony Scott. It's The Hunger, starring the always phenomenal, amazing Catherine Deneuve, with Susan Sarandon and David Bowie, and that's where a lot of people for the first time they get to see Willem Dafoe as he says "fucking junkies," and Bauhaus is in it. It has one of the best openings to any horror movie I've ever seen, or any movie in general. I just really love the power of it. And it's about, again, a very regal, vampire goddess, Miriam Blaylock, if that's her real name. And the man who loves her, who wants to live by her side forever, David Bowie's John Blaylock, and Susan Sarandon. It's interesting. She plays Sarah Roberts, a doctor doing sleep studies and a actually aging studies. And she gets intrigued when David Bowie's character goes to see her, and he has to wait all day. And by the time he leaves, he's like aged like 100 years or something like that. And she's like, "What's
Yeah.
going on?" So, and it's great in regard to, she's an ancient vampire, and they're not relying on the fangs. They're relying on a small little like knife from like an amulet that hangs from her neck, and when she wants to drink somebody's blood, she'll do a slash and she'll drink. And of course that keeps her young. And there's other twists in regards to the vampire mythos in here, but it's great that she's the queen of the damned, so to speak, for real, not to get confused with the Anne Rice book or that really awful movie. And it's just an excellent romance. The music is insane. It's absolutely phenomenal. Beth Ehlers, who plays Alice
Yes.
Cavender, she one of the most phenomenal, child performers, and that was like the only thing she did No, she did a couple more things, but because she was on a TV series and stuff, and then later on she got into soap operas. But a lot of atmosphere, a lot of it's a very blue movie in regard to color. It's weighed down by an intense drama, almost an opera, and but it doesn't get soapy. But it is a little long. It does feel a little bit long sometimes when I watch it. It's like, okay, I know where this is going, but it has the soundtrack alone, and that's probably my key point. The music was by Denny Jaeger and Michelle Rubini. It is some of the creepiest stuff. When I bought the soundtrack and I played it, I put the lights out. I swear to, I was scared shitless. I swear to God, and it was insane how it got to me. It freaked me out. It's a very powerful film because they combine music and images so well.
Yeah, and you know it's interesting, Bill, because of the score to that film, and I was lucky enough to see it on the big screen like almost a year ago.
Bastard.
You know, but you're right, that soundtrack is creepy as fuck, and there's an element of, you know, there's so many juxtapositions in that film. Like you even have that weird seduction scene between Catherine Deneuve and Susan Sarandon, where it is, there is opera playing, and then you have this experimental stuff, and then you have the gothy stuff with Bauhaus at the very beginning. You know, it's pulling from a lot of different places, but it pays off so well. And I think Catherine Deneuve is so, you know, she's powerful. You know, she's definitely an authority figure in this world, this very unique world. But she's so unassuming, and so she's not boastful in her grasp of power, I don't think, except at that one point where she says to Susan Sarandon, and it's more of a warning, actually. It's like, well, you know, you can run all you want to, but you're going to come back to me because you're not going to be able to, you know, withstand the hunger, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's it. She knows. She doesn't have to exert force because she knows I am the food chain. I am at the top. And when she does seduce her, she's playing a beautiful piece called Lakmé, which is about a woman who runs away with her female slave. Perfect song for this. And I always love it when I hear it on TV commercials. It always makes me, go, because, like, do you know what it means? They don't. It sounds really nice. But every song has a meaning, you pinheads. But, and it's great. And like you said, she's unassuming because she can be. She's like the scorpion who knows, like, yeah, I'm the top, and that's it.
I think it's interesting how Catherine Deneuve, you know, who played another iconic role in Repulsion, kind of as a character who was, you know, fearful and hostile towards men. Only, you know, in this film, it's sort of the, you know, in that film, she was still like a strong character, despite the way she was presented as kind of a, not a victim, but as just being perpetually under attack by the outside world. But with The Hunger, she's definitely, it's very cool, it's very icy. But you know, there's this, I mean, I feel like her manipulation is almost as much emotional as it is, you know, just traditional vampire hypnosis trickery kind of stuff. So
Yeah, absolutely. She's playing a chess game and
stringing poor David Bowie along, yeah.
for like 200 years, and it's like forever and ever. And
Get out,
if
David, get out.
you have to check out her and Belle de Jour.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Oh, did you ever see that one? You have to, man. You definitely have to check it out. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and I believe the Umbrellas of Cherbourg, Bill, is another one of hers that's well regarded. But in any case, we digress rapidly.
Absolutely, as normal.
Yeah, but The Hunger is fantastic, and that was on my list as well.
Awesome.
But my number three, I'm going to replace that one with Abby, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, in the 2010 film Let Me In, which is a remake of Thomas Alfredson's, what was that, Norwegian film, Bill?
Swedish.
Swedish, okay. All right.
So you're taking that over the original.
I am, and I have a reason behind
Okay,
it.
cool. I'd like to hear that.
I think it's because the setting was transposed from Sweden to America. I think Matt Reeves, who did the adaptation of the Lindquist novel, I think he brought a bit more of the American youth experience at around that time in the early 80s to the film.
Okay.
And some of it, I can look at some of that and relate to it a bit, even though I was not as old as the kids are in that movie at that point. But I really like that element of it. I really like the actors too in that film. Not that I don't like the actors in the original film, but I really like Chloe Moretz a lot. I hope Hollywood does not ruin her because she's done some great stuff and she's still really young. But I think
Kick
she's,
ass.
yeah, and I still stand by my love for the her version,
Carrie,
the
right?
Carrie remake that she's in. But she essentially plays an ageless vampire who got turned when she was very young. And yeah,
Tween.
she's yeah she yeah she's 12, I think, but she says she's been 12 for a long time. And Bill, in some ways, like The Hunger, there's a bit of a love triangle going on in this film as well, because she moves to New Mexico to this new place with her quote unquote guardian, played by Richard Jenkins, who's always fantastic.
Oh, phenomenal.
But she takes a liking to Owen, who is this very lonely, dejected boy who is pretty much ignored by his parents and picked on by the bullies at his school. And he's played by Cody Smith McPhee. And I really like the there's an element of, again, these films deal in like juxtapositions kind of. So there's this real tenderness to the scenes they share. Like whether it's between Abby and Richard Jenkins or her and Cody Smith McPhee, there are these complicated emotions that are being juggled, and
Right.
in a sense, she's kind of playing both of the male characters in a way. She's been playing Richard Jenkins for who knows how long since he was a kid, and he's essentially tasked with, okay, I got to go out and I got to get blood for her to sustain herself. I got to make sure no one discovers her secret. I got to keep the windows covered and everything like that because of the sunlight.
Right.
So he could kind of becomes like a glorified task man in a way. So I can kind of understand his feelings when he feels like, oh, I'm being traded for a younger model or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
I got the Marilyn Manson song New Model in my head now.
No, Mechanical Animals, a classic. Yeah. But yeah, I really like that. I really like that version of the story a lot, and I think the young actors really hold their own with the more experienced older actors in the film as well. They really churn out the emotion, but in a way that's not naive. It's not drippy or melodramatic, I don't
Right.
think. And I found it really affecting at a lot of places. And I think a big part of that is, very much the Chloe Moretz, who does a really good job with that character. And it's a complex character who's not necessarily explained through dialogue a lot, but more through gestures and glances and, emotions.
I got you. Well, since I'm not going to bring it up now, I mean that was my number one, and
Oh, okay.
the
All right.
original,
Yeah.
from 2008, the Swedish film, starring Lee Anderson as Ellie and Kara Hedebrant as Oscar. I think it's one of, to me, it's it, well, since it's number one. I gave it 5 stars out of 5, and I think it's,
Holy shit, wow.
yeah, I just love this film for all it has, from dialogue and everything else. And yeah, it's hard for me not to say it's the best vampire film ever made.
Holy shit, man.
Yeah, I know, I know, I know. There's gonna be detractors, but screw them.
Well, since we're talking about both films, Bill, what do you think about the
The remake? The American
no,
version, or
no, I'm just thinking like conceiving of the female vampire as granted she the guise of a young girl, but she's not a young girl anymore. What do you have any thoughts on symbolism or just what that means as a contrast to how we
Well, I think you could look at it as someone who's being repressed, and it's like they're not allowed to flourish and be the woman that they want to be, and you definitely see that come through in Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire, with the little one who's like 7 forever. It's like, God, forget, you're like, come on, And it's awful, you're not allowed, you're prevented from becoming, what you should be, and you're stuck in that state. It's like being stuck in like a larva stage or something like that for like ever. It's like wrong. And so I think there's some bitterness in that, and that's why she, and it's great because that's why she needs a helper, because she's a kid. What is she? Hey, how come you're not in school? She's got to go through all that stuff. She'd be leaving bodies all over the countryside, if she didn't have somebody to help her out, And how does she do that? Like, how did she seduce the older character, or get him to, a daddy figure? Did she, was the guy a pedophile? Like, who know? You know what I mean? Who knows? And it's just like that's got to be just awful. And all that pent up anger and bitterness from never being allowed to grow up, and then she meets this boy her age, in a physical sense, and so that's why the ending of the film for both is, it's wonderful. It's like, well, what's going to happen? She's not going to let him get older. I think she wants him as a partner, and I think she's going to turn him, and then they're going to have to find adults to take care of the two of them. That's the way I was looking at it.
That's interesting because I know
We're
I
in
was thinking
limbo.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of it in terms of just like, oh, well, she's got the replacement. She's got the younger model to do what the old man was doing
Right.
for her previously, and just kind of the stringing along.
Well, that's what I liked about the ending, because you don't know. It's like, okay, what's she gonna do now?
Yeah, and for a second you kind of think to yourself, oh, it's a happy ending, and then you're like, no, it's not really.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, they're together, but at what cost? Yeah, so.
Absolutely. So.
Well, Bill, do you have a number two pick then?
Well, I'm, everybody knows my love for Life Force, so I'm not going to bring that up again. But
Good.
you're so funny.
No, Space Girl's awesome. She is.
She is Matilda May, baby.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I really did enjoy was 1994's Interview with the Vampire.
Okay.
Anne Rice did write the screenplay. It should have been made back in the early 80s. She wanted Rutger Hauer to play Lestat, but apparently she was a real pain to work with and all this stuff. It never got done. Then Tom Cruise was getting the role of Lestat, and she was pissed. And it, and then she saw his acting reel of it, and she was like, "Oh, he's fine." So she got over that crap that she had in her head. But I thought it was a great one of the few adaptations of a book to book to screen that went really, really well. Brad Pitt was great as Lewis, which was supposed to be Brandon Lee, but he had been accidentally killed on the set of The Crow. Christian Slater played the reporter who was supposed to be River Phoenix, but he died from an overdose. Who else did we have in there? Yeah, Tom Cruise as Lestat, and well, Thandie Newton's in there. Well, left for a second.
Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, oh, he was, to me, Antonio Banderas was perfect as Armand. right out of the book, right onto the, because I really loved that book by her. And he was perfect. Stephen Ray's in it as well. And this is when the world was introduced to Claudia, you know, played by Kirsten Dunst, who is the little girl who gets trapped. And it's weird. You know, you have that weird thing where she's, over the years, you know, she's a woman trapped in a little kid's body who's sort of in love with Lewis. And it's like, oh, man. You know, like,
yeah.
How do you handle, you know, the mentality and the physical, and the physical differences, and it leads to them fighting all the time because Kirsten Dunst is always walking around with a doll, or like, oh, I lost my doll, help me, and that's how she gets victims, and she's pretty much like, I'm sick of this shit, you know, it's like, and of course it leads to a bunch of really, really bad, nasty things, you know, in Paris for them, but I just thought if you'd love the book, I think you'll really love the movie as well. I do love them both. Of course, I think the book is superior because it, you know, Anne Rice could be very poetic with her words, and that's the one book other than her beauty series, her BDSM series, that I think really resonates with a lot of power. And I'm, you know, I know you're, you know, it's like, well, Interview with the Vampire, it was more about the guys, but you know, taking a look at the perspective of the hell that Claudia had to go through as you know, being that trapped girl, I think it was it just brought out so many things. She was not allowed to be a woman. A man who was became a vampire prevented her from being a woman, kept her down, kept her repressed. And I think that's a whole, if they want to do a movie called Claudia just on her and her experience, I think it'd be explosive. Yeah, so I'm just sneaking that in as my number two because Johnny took it away. took away my number one.
Well, Bill, could I ask you a question?
No.
You know, we were I was talking about Chloe Moretz, and you were talking about the what's her name?
Lena Landerson.
Yeah, from Let Me In. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like Kirsten Dunst had that similar level of, or her character had that sort of, that self-aware wisdom from being in that disposition for so long, kind of?
Yeah, I think the director did a great job with a young actress, and that's when I was amazed. I was like, who is this kid? You know, and that's why, you know, Kirsten Dunst, like, shot up in Hollywood because they were like, who is this kid? You know, making, you know, like, coming to terms with who she is. Like, okay, can you imagine? Okay, I know you're like 8 or whatever, 9, 10, and you're right. Gonna act like, you know, you're gonna act like a 40-year-old, a 30-year-old woman who's really, really pissed off. Okay, I'm gonna watch my mommy. No, I don't know what she did, but you know, she brought a lot of strength to the role, and it wasn't like, oh man, this is a joke. It was like, it was painful to hear her, you know, and to know what happened to her in the story. And even in the book, it's like, this poor kid, what the hell? And it was almost like, you know, and this is like the one sin like Lewis could never get away from. It's like, what have I done? And you could, you know, and you could never, how many times can you say sorry, you know, every day? Oh, look at me, I'm still a little kid. And, oh, man, it was just...
Well, it's almost like a weird sort of reminder as well, too. It's like, you know, that she can never go past that, and that's like a source of guilt or whatever, you know.
Yeah, because in Anne Rice's world, it's very intriguing. How you are is how you remain. So at one point, she's like, I hate this little kid hairstyle. She starts, and she cuts her hair, and it immediately comes back to what it once was. And she can't escape herself. Mm. And it's just gut-wrenching, man. So
yeah, that's well, I love Kirsten Dunst, and over the years she has played, you know, an array of really interesting characters. I mean, I loved her character in The Virgin Suicides, even though it's a very, you know, tragic kind of film ultimately,
which I still haven't seen.
Oh my god.
It's about time. It's about time I said something like that. You've missed. There's like 8. There's like 20 films you got to get onto, man.
you know what, Bill? I wasn't gonna say it because now that you said that, I'm like, I actually haven't seen Interview with the Vampire. So.
Oh, Maron.
I know.
Hell, man.
I've got the book sitting on my shelf and I haven't read it yet. But Okay, I take it I should, so I'll do that. Well, my number two film, Bill, and this one goes a little bit against what I was talking about earlier with the, well, it's like, oh, the sexy vampires.
I know what this one is, yeah.
I rewatched this just last night for the first time in a couple years, and I was like, my 13-year-old self would not know what to do with himself if he saw this movie at that age. And honestly, even at 36, I don't quite know what to do with myself with this movie. It's Jose Larraz's 1974 film, Vampires with a Y.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I
Have
used to
you,
own
you've
that.
seen? Oh yeah.
Yep.
It's a very simple movie,
Very.
really. Not, there's like not much plot to this thing at all.
Nope.
It's essentially subsisting on like a abandoned castle setting where these two, lesbian female vampires lure in. They tend to lure in these very business type guys. They're always like wearing suits and driving sporty cars. It's like, hey, well, let's pose as hitchhikers, offer to take them back to our place, give them a night of wild sex, and then, hey, maybe they'll wake up with a mysterious cut and they'll start acting kind of weird because we're slowly sucking the blood out of them. It doesn't get much more complicated than that. There is a young couple who's like camping out on the grounds nearby, but
Big
they're,
mistake.
yeah, it's kind of funny how they're like so oblivious to stuff for so long, and they hang out there for so long without raising the hackles of the female vampires.
Right.
But the duo is Fran, played by Marianne Morris, and Miriam, played by Anoulka. And
Sabinska.
yeah, and my goodness, it's, I will say it here, the hottest female vampire couple ever in a movie.
But you see that you brought it up, that was it, because I got it because of that, and I'm like, man, they're attractive, and I'm like, but there's no story here. It doesn't really go anywhere, and that's why it's a 2-star movie for me.
Really, Bill?
Really,
Really?
Johnny? Really?
Well, maybe this is one of those cases where
Maybe I need to
the
see it
po
again.
oh, I'll let you borrow my copy.
Yay!
The potency of the eroticism in a non-pornographic film, I just found it so palpable. I did like these characters because like I was saying about Let Me In and the use of expressions and just gestures kind of to communicate things, I think that's used very heavily in this film as well. It's a lot of looks, it's a lot of smirks kind of, and just a lot of very subtle nuanced things going on, that aren't made explicit. And I like that. I kind of liked how the first male character you see them accost, he's you almost feel like he's not acting during the sex scene with Fran because he seems really into it, but
Right.
he becomes sort of the quote unquote blood bag for the two of them. He's
Yeah.
just being slowly drained over a course of who knows how long, and he's just getting increasingly weird and delusional, and detached from reality. And I kind of like that juxtaposition there because it's like, oh, you had a fun night of fucking with us, and now we're just gonna fuck with you in a different sense. So, but I think it's actually a really beautiful and atmospheric film. I could overlook the general lack of plot because I thought the atmosphere was so effective. And there's some funny stuff in it too, like the last victim they attempt to, they lure into the house. He is so preoccupied with giving his, oh, I'm such a wine connoisseur. I know all sorts of wines. It's like, oh, we'll come down into the wine cellar. And it's like he's just more preoccupied with placing the vintage and the type of
Right.
wine that he's drinking than, these two beautiful women in his presence that, So I found that interesting, and it added a little suspense to things. So, I like the repurposing of the gothic elements in the film, and sort of combined with the elements of eroticism. And I think there are two really interesting, two really feral female vampires.
Gotcha.
So anyway,
Nice. Well, I
yeah.
know what your number one is, and my number two, which is now my number one,
Yes.
for this list, and I think people, get what happened. It's interesting. This is my favorite film from this writer, director, producer, the man behind Glass-Eyed Pics, Larry Fessenden. It's 1995's Habit, which was released in 97. He stars as a man. He just lost his girlfriend. His father passed away. He's like, oh man, life sucks. He's drinking, New York City. And he meets this mysterious woman named Anna. And it's one of those Martin, Midnight Sun, Vampire Kiss S. Is she a vampire? Is she not? And I just love this movie. I love it has such a real feel to it. Larry acts the best I think I've ever seen him. It's like you could just totally buy into his character, who he is. And Anna's, a little aloof and strange. And apparently, from what I know, Meredith Snader played the role. And from what I understand, this is her only film.
Wow.
Apparently, they had shot like some sort of a video in 1982 where she played the role, and they d didn't make the actual film until like the mid 90s, and that's all she's ever done. And I love the characters, I love what happens, what transpires, because it's great because Anna, he gets hungry, and he falls into madness. So it's this whole thing about, love and and how much are you willing to going how much of yourself you're willing to give up for someone else kind of thing. And the power that she has over him, even when he might know better and he can't stop himself. And that's part of the beauty of it. I just think it's awesome. It's an excellent low budget indie film. This would be the one to watch, I would say, with The Addiction. Just because of that whole New York low budget feel, and it's just great. Fessenden rocked it, and I just love it. It's a blast. I have to get that. I don't know if it's on Blu-ray, but that's what I have to get. That's one of my next purchases.
I was going to say, Bill, so Larry Fessenden wrote, directed, and starred in that one.
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah, and he. Yeah, and it's on my list of one of the greatest, horror films ever made. I just love the atmosphere that he creates. It's just really fantastic, and I thought it was very powerful. When I saw it, it blew me away. I was just so drawn into it, and I was mesmerized by Anna. I understand. I understand, Larry. I understand. But yeah, I think did he produce it? He did the editing as well. We're talking
Nice,
low
yeah.
budget. I mean, you look at the cast. I mean, you look at the crew, because he even did sound. Like it was one of
Oh,
those
wow.
deals. It's like, okay, somebody hold the mic. We gotta go. We gotta, So, and I thought I still think it's his best work.
So it sounds more like the Addiction, Bill, in that it's more of a character driven kind of film then.
Right. And what's interesting is I don't know if you learn of Anna's origins or not. I don't think you do, which is great. She truly remains a mystery woman. How did she become the way she did? Why does she act the way she does? And in that sense, it's great because she's a free woman, a free spirit. And it's Larry Fessenden, when he wrote this, it's a complete role reversal, he's lost in his own soup in his head, and she's the puppet master. And I think for, a female-based horror movie, with a vampire, I think this is one of those that, matches up. She's not regal like, Catherine Deneuve, or she doesn't have that super tough presence like, Grace Jones in Vamp, but she still has a presence, and she still leaves her mark, so to speak. Sorry, go ahead, man. Go
Well, you know
ahead.
what?
I know. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, man.
No,
I
you
don't know
go
what's
ahead.
happened. No. I know because I know what's coming next.
Oh, okay. All right. You think you know, and you're probably right.
You want me to
Well, this
announce it? Because I know what it is.
you want to announce it, Bill? What is it?
You're number one.
Yeah.
Daughters of Darkness.
Bill, come on. I wasn't holding your head under the water for that long. Come on. Well, yeah, it is. And this film, like you were talking about, Habit and Suck Bill as being on your greatest horrors of all time list. This is definitely it's my favorite female vampire film, but it's probably also my favorite vampire film, period.
All right, and I this is a great one.
Yeah, I love it. After I believe, I'm curious here. Need to. Actually, it was the same year as the Jess Franco film Vampiros Lesbos, so I don't know which one came. Yeah, I don't know which one came first. But I still haven't seen that one. But
I couldn't get past 5 minutes.
I can't get past most just yeah
No.
5 minutes of most Jess Franco films. But
No.
Daughters of Darkness is just. There's a sense of regality. It's about Countess Batory, played by the luminous Delphine Seyrig, and her quote unquote secretary Alona, played by, oh, that's, I just noticed that name anyway, played by Andrea Rau.
Yeah.
And, they find themselves at this seaside hotel that's absolutely beautiful, but very much of a bygone era, I would say. And they just happen to accost two newlyweds, and there's unhappiness among the newlyweds and distrust because it was like a rushed marriage, and there's all sorts of drama going on. So Countess Batory, she finds herself drawn to this woman, and in a sense, I love the subplot, or the plot, you could say, of her trying to pull this woman away from her abusive sack of shit husband,
Yeah.
basically. The
John
he's he's
Carlin.
yeah and he's presented as a totally abusive, he's so cool, but he's one of those guys who will whip his wife with a belt if she looks at him the wrong way,
Yeah,
sort
yeah,
of thing.
yeah.
So I think understandably so, there's a bit of empathy from the Countess regarding this. But then you have poor Alona, who is, what about her needs and desires? And there's this interesting four-way relationship that develops between
Yes.
these characters, because Alona finds herself drawn to the husband while the Countess finds herself drawn to the wife, and is doing a they're each doing their own sort of competing seduction with these two people. And I think it's a very subtly potent film, kind of in the sense of The Hunger in a
Oh,
way.
sure.
There you can definitely draw parallels to Catherine Deneuve and Delphine Seyrig in those two films. But I think Delphine Seyrig is just so, just she has this wonderful face and this wonderful look, and she's just very unassuming. She's just very matter of fact, and she's just very naturally charming from however many years she's been on the planet to practice such a thing. And I love that about her character. She's just so luminous would be a good word. You're seduced by her as much as the characters are.
Absolutely. This is an excellent film. I kept it off the list purposefully because I knew it'd be your number one, you know. You know, Harry
Thanks.
Kumel did such a great, amazing job with it. And one of the things that I really loved in it as well is the cinematography by Edward van der Enden. You know, he did such an excellent job, and the coloring of it, you know, it has this feel to it that's just really amazing. And it becomes more profound near the end of the film. And I just loved what he captured and what they all brought to it as a cast, you know, because John Carlin, I mean, he's been around for, man's going to be 85 in May.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, you know, he's been on a lot of American TV shows, Cagney and Lacey way back. And, you know, so a lot of people know him. So you get to see him in a different light doing film. And, like you said, it creates they create a wonderful soup of four characters and, you know, where things headed. And it's great. It's a nice, tight character study and full of mystery and a lot of other interesting things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's beautifully shot, and there's a real mood to the setting, and the seaside location where the hotel is located too. There
Yeah, oh man.
is a sense of kind of isolation and loneliness and longing, definitely, that runs through the film very, very strongly. So.
Excellent call. Yeah, it's the rare Belgian French West German collaboration. And it's not even 90 minutes, it's 87. I wonder if there's some additional footage that was never shown. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, you know what? I have the DVD. I don't know. I thought it was longer than that, but maybe it's been a while since I've watched it. So,
Yeah, definitely a 4-star film for me, and I know it's higher than that for you, so.
it's a 4.5 for me. So, it's definitely close to a perfect movie. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Good one.
Well, Bill,
All
I feel like we're gonna turn into pumpkins soon. Do you have any
right.
final thoughts on Lady Vamps? And I was gonna bring up just a brief point. And the
Go ahead.
do you, did you, did you feel that there was a disproportionate amount of male directors or writers behind these films about female vampires? And if you think that's indicative of anything?
Yeah, well, it's funny. Like I said, you know, I pointed out specifically, Larry Fessenden, you know, taking to account of like a role reversal and all, he took a very intelligent approach not to be like, you know, some misogynistic filmmaker and all. And I think, you know, you're always going to have that, you know, sex appeal factor. I mean, but I just think it's interesting how people in general, regardless of who the writer is of the story or the director, that people automatically, when, you know, two women are, you know, vampires on screen, and I didn't bring up Lair of the White Worm because we talked about that so many times as well. You know, you have this seductress, this predator, and, you know, when she goes after a woman, it's like, oh, it's lesbianism. And it's like, well, they're food, you know, they're food for vampires, you
It's a
know?
metaphor,
Yeah, exactly. But when, you know, a guy does it, no one, you know, 1931, you know, they weren't like, oh my gosh, Dracula, he's gay. He's going after John Harker. Who knows what he did to Renfield? Oh my God, you know. I never heard anyone say that stuff, you know. Although, you know, I think homoeroticism probably came into play more with the Lost Boys than anything else, you know. But
Yeah, notably absent from our two lists.
yeah. Yeah, so what about you, man?
No, I just it's just something I was observing as I was jotting down the behind the scenes people. I thought, just to bring up something I thought was interesting with vampires and how I was talking about how stimulating and erotic that film is. That was a film the screenplay is credited to a woman. So
As well as a couple, you know, yeah, Jean Perry and the director as well.
yeah, so I mean, there is that element of women. I you know, maybe the writer of Vampires was kind of like, well, I want to present women in all their glory in a way, present them as beautiful, as on display kind of to the world, and that's okay, And there's nothing wrong with embracing that sexuality, which is something that, cinema, I mean, even today, kind of suppresses a lot of, it's like it's the males get to have their pleasure, the females get an abbreviated version, or they don't get a version of it, kind of. And I feel like there was more of a proliferation of, back in the 70s when things were a bit more, I don't want to say edgy because it was just kind of the time, you know.
Yeah,
Film,
hard to argue.
I feel like films were more, you saw more nudity just even in American films, and you know, it was more of an embrace of kind of, the sexual politics of that time. And in some ways, I think in the ensuing years, we've got a bit more cloistered toward, toward that for whatever reason. So I'm rambling, but
No. The interesting thing is, Anne Rice, in regard to Interview with the Vampire, you could tell the homoeroticism, reeks of it, and it's funny that oh man, I had a real witty line and it went away, because lights shine through the window and I got lost in the lights, but no, I think it was really interesting how she was, taking that perspective and making, and she showed women in there as, suffering, for the most part, until she got with like Queen of the Damned, and it's like, yeah, there's a queen's gonna lead them because I'm, sick of all this male stuff. But I thought it was really wonderful what how important it was, I think, for, I don't know if it was important for her or not. I don't know what was behind her in showing like this young girl trapped. Trapped forever as being a young girl when she's a woman, and what that had to say. So, yeah, potent stuff, man. But all cool movies, all cool movies.
Yeah, and there are a lot more out there too. So,
Yeah, thankfully. But yeah, so there we are.
Well, Bill, do you have people you want to scream out to tonight?
Yes, I do. And as we've been doing all month, we're screaming out to a new slate of women we haven't screamed out to before. So here we go. These are all people you could follow on Twitter. Zobo with Shotgun. And she is a film reviewer. She's awesome. Film reviewer, content writer, social media-er. She loves horror, whiskey, beards, Cat 3, and Shrek. And she's social and, and PR. You could check her out at Charismata Film. And her writing, or social and PR at Charismata Film, and her writing at The Horror Cyst. And she's based out of London. And go to her excellent website, zobowithashotgun.com. Frigid Despair. Who's that? That's Obath. O_BAPH. Bathowitch is dead. Frigid Despair is here. And why is she in Frigid Despair? Because she's in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, man.
But she's very cool, and it was really interesting today because she posted, she posted a new profile picture of herself, and the old one was beautiful, the new one's beautiful, and apparently she had to make clear to some guys who went beyond saying, "Oh, you look beautiful," that I'm still a lesbian, I'm not going to change, leave me alone. Yeah, so she's very cool, very cool. Eve Irving, what is that? Eve Irving 69. She's a psychologist, author, illustrator, and you could she's into pagan books, and those pagan books of hers are on Amazon. She's English and sassy, so approach with caution or cookies. And yeah, she's fantastic. Another fantastic soul, Keys Keysworth. And that's all with Z's. She's an army vet. She's a gift queen, gore whore, vulgar. She's a professional stalker and proud of it, man. Filmmaker. You could find her connected with Six Tape. That's two X's. Mafioso. She's part of the horror fam, and of course, she supports indie film. And she's part of the Terror Crew. Perfect for this. Women in Horror Film Festival. They are the WIHFF. And it's the official Twitter of Women in Horror Film Festival, a film festival showcasing and celebrating women in horror. And they're out of Atlanta, Georgia. Go to their excellent website, WIHFF.com. That horrible woman, and that is the THW underscore podcast. She's not really horrible. She's just misunderstood. That's me saying it. She's the new vibe of horror and modern dark fiction podcast. And she's a contributor also on Tracy TR's Scream Radio, Scream without the E. And you could find out more about her on info at thathorriblewoman.com or go to her website, thathorriblewoman.com. She is awesome. Jennifer Slutter, and that's Jen Slutter with one N. She's a director of marketing for Sunshine Boy Productions, CEO. She's also works with Kevin Slutter, underscore Slutter. in that sense, horror, sci-fi, noir. They did great shorts like Feeding Time Film, Play Violet for Me, which I love, and soon Heartless Movie Underscore is coming out. Support indie films, support them. They're out of LA. Go to sunshineboyproductions.com for more. The phenomenal D underscore M underscore Elms, DM Elms, Fake Geek Girl, Horror Chick, Autistic, Solar Baby, Velma Dinkley, Lookalike, from Care-A-Lot, who loves Leave It to Beaver, and
Jinkies.
DD to World's Laboratory. And she's out of Beaverton, Oregon. And check out her site and her story at sidelings.com. Two more, my friend. First one is Brie. She is the embalmist. She's the owner of Macabre underscore Melts, Ouija, Tarot, Empath, Witch, Horror Flicks, Horror Convention Work, Haunted Attraction, and Horror Movie Reviewer. And she's out of Nashville, and you could follow her shop on Etsy, and it's Macabre Melts again. And finally, Jennifer Elm, who is that? That's Stitched underscore Radis. Don't judge what you don't understand. My rats are my life. Horror fan, LGBT, and she posts daily horror art, which she does, and it's always awesome. She's engaged to Romantic Corpse, and she's a mental health advocate. She's out of San Diego. Man, I wish we had their weather right now. And you can check her out at Facebook at Anna Paquin Fans. So there we go, man.
Golly, Bill. After all that, this will seem minor by comparison, but you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my movie reviews in addition to CrashPalaceProductions.com at LoudGreenBird.com. Billy, what about
Woo!
you?
You could find me on Twitter as Crash Palace. You could also find me as Billy Crash on Instagram. And also go to CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this site, some of Johnny's writing, some of writing great writing from DM Elms, Dixie Fairy, and other wonderful souls. And hopefully we'll have more soon. And also listen to this show on iTunes. And don't forget to leave a starred comment, whether you love us or hate us. We don't care. And please leave your comments. Let us know what you think about, well, maybe not about the show, but about the content. What are your favorite vampire, lady vampire or female vampire films? What do you think about some of the things we brought up in regards to tone and intent and all that fun stuff? Let us know. So there we go.
Absolutely.
So, Johnny, that's it, man.
All right, Billy. I'm going to go hang out with Marianne Morris and Anulka. I'll give you a call later.
Okay, you do that. Let me know what happens.
I'm gonna have a cut on my arm, and I'm gonna start acting really weird.
And on that note,
that's them now.
okay, on that note, we're out of here. Bye, bud.
See ya.